Julia Davenport knew something was wrong. You see, there seemed to be a connection with her orgasms and men dying. So she took meds to suppress them and faked her orgasms. But one unfortunate day, something went terribly wrong that set her off on a journey to becoming New York's newest superhero, Off-Girl. Off-Girl is an ongoing comic series created and written by Tina Fine and illustrated by Mark Rahill that pushes the envelope of the standard superhero. Irreverent, provocative, and fun, with amazing art to showcase the story, Off-Girl is a comic you won't want to miss. Go to offgirl.com to check out excerpts, download the digital version, and order yourself a print copy today. Off-Girl at offgirl.com.
This is Hermes Conrad, bureaucrat level grade 36, and you are listening to the Canned Air Podcast. No, stop it and get back to work.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And joining us today, a few special guests. First, we have a... Man, we've got a founder in-house, Jack. Mm-hmm. This is, we need to be dotting our I's, crossing our T's, because one of the people that pays the bills is in here with us today.
Absolutely.
We welcome Randy Hardenbrook to the show. Randy, thank you so much for being here. It's awesome to have you in the studio. We've talked to you before, some live shows, but to actually have you in here hanging out with us, it's been a long time coming.
Gave him a bunch of comics and toys one time, too.
Oh, yeah.
Appreciate you guys having me on.
Awesome, man. I'm glad glad to have you here. And then we also are welcoming from drawmeincomics.com, Mr. Brennan Risling. Brennan, thank you so much
Oh, thanks for having me so much. I'm glad I could be here.
We have a good show lined up for you guys today in our retro roundtable. We're going to be talking 70s pop culture, keeping in theme with the last 2 weeks. We've covered the 50s and 60s. Wow, who didn't see this coming? The 70s. Anything to come out of the 70s, we're going to be talking about a lot of cool things here on our list.
I think they get cooler.
Yeah, it looks like Randy's.
Oh, yes.
Randy's got some visuals over here. I'm excited for that.
Brought visuals to a podcast, you know.
And then in our comic.
The best time to bring them.
Then in the comic vault, gentlemen, what are we talking about today?
I have The Scourge. It's a number zero comic from, I couldn't find the date on it. Actually, there it is right on the front, 2010.
Mystery solved.
Yep.
I've got two Sonic comics from last year.
Very cool. Very cool. All IDW titles, right? Yes. Yeah, you showed me those before we started. Very good. A few of the titles we'll be talking about there. And then we'll turn our full attention over to Brennan and talk more about Draw Me In Comics, which I'm excited to talk about because it's like a pretty cool format, right?
Yes. But it is. I'm biased, but I think it's pretty cool as well. You know, I'm just going to put that out there.
I'd have to agree with you. And I forgot to tell everyone that you have the nickname The Riz. Is this something that we should be addressing you by from here on out, or?
I will give you the choice. Professionally, I go by The Riz usually, yes. When I had my first band, I wanted to have a secret identity, you know, like the Ramones.
Oh, wow. So should have I never even said your name at the top of the episode?
Most of the time when I get to do these cool conversations, I go by The Riz, my superhero name.
Henceforth, you will be called Riz. The Riz, excuse me. The is very important.
The Riz. You want to go with the or da?
No, the. Yeah. The. 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 All right. But before we do all that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And hey, go over to Patreon. Throw a few dollars our way for $5 a month. You can get access to the Patreon-only show we do over there. It releases once a month. We have a new episode coming out. Just came out by the time this airs. How many are on there now? About 17, 18,
idea. More than I know that there are.
Yeah, there's quite a few episodes on there. So you're getting your money's worth for $5 a month. And Jack, what do we have on the Wizard front?
Well, Wizard World this weekend in St. Louis, Missouri is going on the 5th through the 7th, I think it is. And the next one coming up is going to be in Culver City, California, the Ghostbusters Fan Fest.
Ooh,
with Wizard World, June 7th and 8th.
Now, that was going on last year when we attended, I think.
the con, right? There was a whole Ghostbusters theme last year at the Columbus.
Yeah, but this is a big anniversary special hoopla thing. This is a new thing this year.
Wow.
But if you're interested to either one of those or want to go to any Wizard World show, use promo code CANDAIR in the little promo code box when you're getting your tickets to get 10% off.
Well, what about those passes? We have passes we're giving away?
Not yet. We don't have till June.
Really? There's that big a gap?
Yeah, there's a big gap this
time. Wow. All right. Well, we have passes coming, people. We have passes coming. So
yeah, keep an eye out because we're going to have 2 3-day priority platinum passes to the event.
We've been giving them away like Crazy Larry's Carpet Emporium. Like, this got to go. It's got to go. Right? Let's get on with it with our retro round table.
And here we go.
All right, guys. 70s pop culture. Where do we begin?
The year 70, I think.
The year 70.
Okay.
I don't have anything specifically dated like we had.
Let me just look at my list here.
So I guess I'll go ahead and start.
Go ahead, Randy. Cool. What you got?
So me being the total tech nerd I am, 70s was like the birth of the home video game console. I mean, I brought a Magnavox Odyssey 2 that everybody can see since this is a podcast. But, you know, you've got the arcades. You had Space Invaders hitting, Asteroids. The Atari 2600, which was known as the VCS at that time.
Pong came out in 72, right?
Yeah.
The era of brain melting has begun.
Said then, parents who just don't understand.
And then on top of that, in 75, you have the founding of Microsoft, and then 76, you got the founding of Apple. So
wow. Yeah. The titans of the industry now.
And they're still holding up.
I would say so, Jack. I would certainly say so. I mean, look at the Apple logos that are around this room alone. Yeah. They're doing all right. It's funny how some of those games, like those Atari games, are still getting played today. You know, you see these, like, and I don't know, Brennan, if there are any bars like this where you're at. I'm sure there are, where we have two in Columbus here, like 16-bit arcade and grill, and then there's Old North Arcade.
8-bit cafe, too.
Oh, there's a third one?
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and up here in Saskatoon, we have a place called Bartari that has a selection of newer games and older games, and it's very much the same type of style. So
awesome.
The first time I ever saw that, I was in Vegas on Fremont Street, and I walked by this club, and there was the bouncer with, you know, the suit and the rope and everything, and it was this huge arcade like that. And I always said, when I go back to Canada, I will start one. And I didn't, but luckily someone else did. So, yeah, we have that here as well.
Wow. Okay, that sounds a lot cooler than ours.
Yeah. I think the bouncers need to be dressed up like Pac-Man or Donkey Kong.
Ooh, the ghosts in Pac-Man. Yes. There you go. And they chase you
around.
That'd
be awesome.
No, but it's amazing to me. And the name of that bar is a perfect example of just how those old games stay popular. You know, the nostalgia boom, I'm sure, is partly responsible. But there's definitely a dedicated, loyal, and I think you're probably in this group, Randy, dedicated retro gaming community that's keeping these games alive and relevant.
It's a part of the history. And
Yeah. And they need to be kept alive because the kids need to see what we came up on, you know?
Well, not only that, how great is it to plug a game in and not wait for an hour for it to update before you can even play it?
Or not have to require a DLC. I can just put Pitfall in and jump between pits of alligators, right? No DLCs required. Brennan, what about you? 70s.
70s. Well, as the music connoisseur that I like to think I am or pretend I am, mid-70s is when a little genre of music called punk rock was first created. Ooh. So the first Ramones album is often accredited as being the first punk rock album, but it was actually The Damned with their record Damn Damn Damned that came out in the mid-70s. That was the English record that really kind of set the genre afire. But it was the Ramones' first album, which is the one that basically started the rush of bands, right? So when people heard the first Ramones album, that was the record that they thought, oh man, if those guys can make a record, so can I. And that's the album that really spawned the whole movement that it became, right? So, and then from there, that turned into New Wave and kind of alternative music in the 90s and just totally changed everything from that point on. So as a music guy, I would say the 70s was the decade for punk. That's when it all started.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't even think about that. So yeah. Who was it that did London Calling? That was... That was
The Clash.
The Clash. Yeah. So have any idea how close that was to the Ramones hitting the scene?
That was right on the heels of them. Unlike you, I didn't make notes, so I don't have dates in front of me. But
you're at a party, for Christ's sake. I don't expect you to have notes.
But off the top of my head, like, I think the first Clash album was like 77. I think the first Ramones album was 75, 76. So It was kind of like the Damned, Ramones, Clash all came out around the same time. I read an interview with Joe Strummer, and there was, I forget if they were in the States or if the Ramones were in England, but the Ramones were in England, and Joe Strummer and the Clash wanted to see them play and couldn't get in, so they snuck around the back, and apparently the Ramones helped Joe Strummer and the Clash, like, climb in through the back windows of the club to go see the Ramones play.
Really?
So this really, like, classic kind of punk rock moment. So that whole time it all spawned around the same time, right? And then a band like The Clash went on to diversify their music more, right? They got really heavy into reggae and ska and sort of turned, you know, punk meets new wave meets kind of getting almost artsy with some records, whereas the Ramones basically stuck to their guns and re-recorded the same genre up until they stopped playing, right? So
it's kind of crazy to think, too, like, while all that was going on, you had Led Zeppelin being, like, kind of in their prime, too. So
yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of, like, the biggest, most pretentious prog rock was happening at the same time, right? So it was kind of this decade of great musical excess and then also tearing it down and saying, let's not be that way. You know, some of us don't want to listen to 10-minute guitar solos all the time.
Yeah. The 70s seemed like, to me, like, okay, the Beatles have now left the scene. Let's take everything we've learned here and run with it, you know? And so much great stuff has come out of the 70s for sure. For sure. As far as comics go, 1978, the very first Garfield comic strip ever released.
Wow, was that long ago?
It was that long ago, yeah.
He didn't even look anything like he did in the newer comics.
He didn't?
No, he was more triangular instead of being just a little round cat.
He was harsh looking at the very beginning. He actually looked mean. Like, if you saw Garfield, you'd be scared. You're like, oh, man.
I'm looking this up
Odie
right now.
Odie looked totally different, too. I mean, he was still the same big-tongued dog, but the way he looked was way, way different.
Original look of Garfield.
He was definitely the grumpier looking cat. Yeah, yeah. You would step aside if that cat walked by you.
He was actually fat too, versus just the little round cat that he was.
Yeah, I definitely prefer, anyone but that one.
Yeah.
He's hideous.
But you know, if Superman eventually lost the red trunks, you know, Garfield's allowed to look different too, right? So
yeah.
You know, if superheroes can change outfits, then I think it's allowed if cartoon cats can as well.
His look just keeps getting better from what I'm seeing from this this time graph here, Garfield's evolution. But did you guys happen to hear recently? I just saw on the news the other day, in France, for the past 35 years, washing up on one of the beaches occasionally have been, you know, the old Garfield telephones?
Really?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like he looks like he's laying, I think his eyes open when it rings. Mm-hmm. And these phones have been washing up on the shore, unexplained. They don't know why, for 35 years. And just this past week, I think it was like an environmental crew was out there like picking up litter and they found this crate like wedged between these rocks that has slowly been dropping these things into the water.
It's like it fell off of a ship or something like
that. I mean, I can't imagine a Garfield phone heist, you know, that these things probably came from. It had to have been purely either that or like someone came into them like, what the fuck am I going to do with these? Just throw them in the
slowest
water, you know?
Invasion in the world of Garfield phones.
But they had them all like laid out in the sand and shit. That's so funny.
How Atari buried all those games in the desert.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking was the Atari burial. Yeah. But that could be like an inside joke. You could write into, I don't know, like Con Air 2, the international flight or something. You know, make it a time period piece. And for some reason, they have a bunch of cargo they have to take like overseas, and the one crate that falls out is like the thing of Garfield phones, and one of the convicts could be like, "I always wanted one of those," you know. That should be written to something somewhere.
You got Nick Cage said, "Put the pussy down."
I'm constructing the scene in my head now. I'm Steve Buscemi, like, "Well, we got to jettison some crates or something, and then just throw the Garfield phone." I mean, they're like 40 years out of date at this point anyway, Garfield, right? Yeah. Why would they have that cargo on that plane to begin with?
It could pick up a prequel kind of thing, you know, a prequel story. Maybe it takes in modern times when the phones were new. Who knows?
So the Garfield phone is just a way of solidifying to the viewer of it's actually early 80s. Remember, it's early, or yeah, so maybe that phone came late 70s. I don't know when the phone actually came, but I found that story to be hilarious.
That's awesome.
Just releasing one every so often.
just enough to keep people going, "What the fuck?
Oh, I remember these."
Yeah.
Now the question is, did anyone take them home and try to plug them in and you wouldn't use them still? That's what I'm wondering.
Oh, these things were beat to fuck. Like, they were, yeah, they were in pieces. Pieces, yeah.
Yeah.
The mood rings.
Nuh-uh, 70s?
That's what I got here, yeah.
They never worked for me. Like, mood anything never worked. Like,
it was always black, I think. It just stayed.
Well, that says something about you.
I guess so. You guys got a bad attitude, eh?
So you turn one color and it says, "Oh, you're anxious." Like, no, I'm not. I'm good. Yeah. Good.
Just a little hot.
Yeah. I'm balmy.
Can't you see I'm sweating here? That's why it's showing white.
Oh, Randy, what else we got?
The black ring match your black heart? Is that what that means? Yeah.
I think that's what that means.
Yeah. Stay away from him.
I'm just going to move on the other side of the desk now.
What else you got, Randy?
So in the 70s, we got the birth of the slasher genre. We had Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Halloween come out.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we did. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, before that was always just weird monster movies.
It takes a lot for a film to like really get under my skin and scare me. Like, horror is a genre I enjoy, but I think I'm probably the most particular with. Like, 90% of horror films I watch, I'm like, "Oh, no, yeah, thank you.
I can't do the blood." I'm always like the classic monster movies, like the old Universal black and white.
Yeah, but I dig those, but I dig those on a different level. Those are like more of like, okay, it's cinematic history. It's cool to see, you know, some of the monsters that have spawned the many other monsters to come after. Right. Because I used to watch Frankenstein every Halloween. I love that movie. That's such a good film. But you're right. Yeah, like the bloody slashers, yeah, like the murder porn kind of stuff. I can't really. I'll watch, but I don't actively go for it. I like the devil kind of stuff, like The Exorcist and stuff like that. Yeah. But Texas Chainsaw Massacre was kind of that exception.
We also had Dawn of the Dead in the 70s, too.
Ooh. So. Chainsaw Massacre is the one that still creeps me to this day. Yeah. Creeps me out. Like when they bring Grandpa downstairs and they're trying to like bash her head open over that trough, like that's horrifying.
Yeah. I've still never seen it from being scarred from when I was a kid watching listening to it and seeing the first opening clips of the movie and then being like, nope.
Well, like the camera, like the
Yeah, and then just seeing
that's
the
like creepy noise in itself.
Yeah,
you know,
that's all I got to watch, and then I sat there and listened to the rest of it, and yeah, I had nightmares for a while.
Well, speaking of movies, 1975 was also Jaws, which is technically the first big summer blockbuster film,
right? Yeah.
So I was going to go there next. Actually, I was just waiting to jump in. I'm like, wait, I have another thing with Jaws, and you took it. Thanks.
I'm sorry. Hey, really quick, feel free to interject, jump in. Don't feel like you have to be addressed.
Just be like, hey, shut up.
No, it's all good. Yeah, no, that was the first and like, but as far as the horror movie genre goes, like I'm still the classic Friday the 13th fan, you know, like that was the first one, and you know, they were so fun and campy and so stupid, but at the same time, when you first watched those, that was the first time that they could use like latex and makeup in really cool ways, and you'd watch it to be like, how did they make it look like that, and how could they make that effect, and that was really the charm of a lot of those early ones, you know. Like now when they're, like you said, the violence porn or whatever, it's just, you know, they're trying to go over the top, but they're kind of losing a lot of the characters that were in the first ones, you know. And if memory serves, again, it's not on my notes in front of me. I think, didn't Friday the 13th, didn't it kick Empire Strikes Back off the number one movie slot when it was released?
Did it really?
I'm not aware of that. About right, I think, actually.
Yeah, because when it came out, it was such a surprise. Like, it was, no one had seen anything like that before, and it was done on like a shoestring budget.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it was Empire, and it was released, and it kicked it off from number one to number two, and it was like the top of the box office for a little while.
Yeah. Such a good movie. I love that first. Same way with Nightmare on Elm Street. And I'm not saying anything prolific. I mean, it's obvious the originals are always going to be the best. But
that was the 80s.
I'm sorry?
That's next week's episode.
Yeah, that's the 80s, man.
Oh, sorry. Jesus Christ.
Wow. Hold your thoughts for next week.
Wow. Conversation cut short. Sorry, Brennan. I was going to relate to you there on a personal level, but I can't until next week.
Well, I guess you can, because we were talking about gore porn. And
yeah. Really
back then, so.
Yeah, I'm allowed now.
Proceed.
Oh, I see. I see.
Unless you count some of the Italian stuff, because I think in the mid-70s, that was when he had like a lot of the European horror stuff come out. And well, that was
The Godfather,
crazy.
Too.
I've never seen The Godfather.
Me either.
Was the 70s when we had the, I think it's when they started doing the like one-foot G.I. Joes, correct? Was that in the 70s?
I think that was last, you brought up that last week, right?
The 60s for G.I. Joes, yeah.
Yeah, was it? I couldn't remember.
Minis, though, or were those the 80s?
The big ones, yeah, the mini ones came in the 80s.
Yeah. Okay.
Before that, they were like Barbie doll size.
Oh, that's what he meant by 1 foot, by 12-inch tall. I thought it was like,
I got you, Riz, I got you.
G.I. Joe with 1 foot? I don't know.
I think that's the G.I. Joes they're making now, isn't it? The diverse Joes, I think they're called? Is that what the new one's called?
Colonel Pegleg. Oh, man. All right. another thing we have here, Saturday Night Live debuted in the 70s.
Yeah.
And boy, what do we, you guys watch current SNL?
I haven't watched the newer one lately. There's a couple people I enjoy on it, but more often than not, no.
What'd you say, Brennan?
I haven't watched it in years, partly just because I just watched a lot less TV, you know, but I don't know. Like, a show I've always enjoyed, but just, I don't know. I guess the 90s kind of ruined it for me, and then I just never really went back.
Oh, you didn't like 90s SNL. I loved 90s SNL. Yeah.
It depends. It was hit and miss. Like, sometimes it was really good, and sometimes I was just like, ugh. You know? Like,
really?
I used to tape it on my VCR, you know? Like, I used to tape episodes and things, so. But then I just kind of got tired of it.
Sure. I can understand that.
Early 90s, I think, was a little dry, but then they started getting some of the big people.
90s was like freaking Farley, Spade, Sandler, Schneider, who else? Nealon,
Chris Rock.
Yeah.
Adam Sandler in there.
Oh, Dennis, what's his name? Dennis
Miller.
Miller.
Yeah,
thank
he was
you.
The Weekend Update guy.
He was so funny. Weekend Update.
Him that and was Norm. My favorite part was Dennis Miller. That was the part that I really enjoyed. You know, like that was probably one of the best casts it had a long time. But I just disliked David Spade so much. I think that kind of tarnished the whole show for me a little bit.
I can relate. I still kind of dislike him, and I don't know why. I guess, but
it's just so Weasley. And
I guess it was the show Just Shoot Me. That show can make a person hate David Spade if you don't already.
That's definitely the truth.
If you're looking to hate David Spade,
watch that show.
Me.
Yeah.
Chris Farley's my spirit animal, guys. I just can't.
he's of him. Yeah. That was too bad. Man, that was a dark day.
His 20-year anniversary, I think it was. This came around not too long ago.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. Within the last year. Yeah.
Shows you what kind of fan I am. Jeez.
What else we got, guys? Anything else, Brennan?
Off the top of my head, no. I actually did a quick search before I came, so a few things off the top of my head. But now that I'm in the heat of the conversation, I can't think of anything right now. So I was born in the 70s, so that's got to count for something, right? I mean, that was a pretty big that was a pretty big deal for me. You know, looking back on my own personal history, that was pretty impactful.
I have been the Riz, brought to you by the 70s.
Hey, it worked for the show, because if you weren't born then we wouldn't have you to talk to.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, Women's Lib, I guess, was a big thing in the 70s.
Oh, yeah, you know? Absolutely.
Politically, yeah, that was a huge social game changer there. So that was a lot of social movements. That was also, the famous, you know, I'm bad with titles and specifics, but there was like some very famous photographs from like Vietnam and things coming out.
Oh,
and,
right.
Yeah. The little girl running away from the napalm and stuff. Not to bring it down a little bit. Yeah. Maybe that's that was in the 70s. Watergate. Was that the 70s? I'm pretty sure.
That was. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nixon's impeachment or resignation, rather.
Yeah, Nixon making some bad choices and that kind of thing. So
Yeah, it seemed to be his MO, didn't it?
Light bright.
Oh. Speaking of Nixon.
Exactly. That's what brought it up.
No correlation light, there, but hey, light bright is
light
still...
Light bright Nick tracks.
Oh, there you go. Maybe if he would have played with a light bright instead of spying on his own people, you know, he would still be present. Who knows?
Well, that could be. Lesson learned too late.
Look at what I made. Look at what I made. Yeah. Light bright.
19... What's that?
That's a movie. I see. Maybe that's what Alan Moore should, you know, in The Watchmen, Nixon was still present. He should go back and do a prequel where maybe Nixon gets to play with light brights and toys in the '70s, and it changes his whole world perspective, and he becomes a really nice guy. You know,
that kind of feels like a Mel Brooks production or yeah, Monty Python.
I wanted to go to war, but this light bright has me entranced.
Somehow he got smoking weed and just made psychedelic pictures with his light bright.
I still have my light bright.
Do you?
In the basement, in its ratty old box. There I still have it.
Nice.
I can't say that it's going to say 1970 something on it, but it definitely has 80s on it. Probably or is that for next week's conversation? No. Excuse the fuck out of me.
Yeah. I still have an original Pong, the actual original Pong console, we're talking about that. Yeah. And I have my Star Wars Death Star play set. So
yeah.
Still have a lot of those fun toys. I guess, yeah, Star Wars too, big 70s. Have you guys heard of Star Wars? It was kind of a big deal at the time.
I'm familiar with it, I think.
So, yeah. That was a conflict amongst
the stars, it sounds like. Yeah. I can't imagine.
I thought that was the 80s with Reagan.
Well, you're not wrong.
So along those lines, too.
But that's next week, Jack.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure there's a Star Trek movie. There's probably a trademark war over that when Reagan tried to use the Star Wars thing. You know, I'm not sure, but I'm sure there must have been some kind of copyright infringement there.
Yeah, because if the Worldwide Wildlife Federation or whatever can hassle the WWF until they give in, it can be done.
Yeah, Star Wars the motion picture or Star Trek the motion picture, the worst one of them all.
And I would be remiss if. Being a comic book podcast, and we didn't mention the Superman movie with Christopher.
Classic. That was so good.
Yeah. And see, that's a great thing about these. If we miss something, we can always do it again.
Yeah. Yep.
That's true. I mean, in 20 minutes, it's hard to cover everything, and I know I'm going to forget something that people are like, what the fuck? Why didn't you say this? Yeah. But I'm just not perfect. Not perfect.
Well, we only got a few minutes to talk about stuff, so
we'll
leave something
out. And if they knew everything, then they should be on the show, right? So come on. So it's way more difficult when you're actually doing the talking and trying to think at the same time. It gets complicated.
If you had an idea, you should have called in.
Exactly.
One thing that came out of 79 that I just changed my life, and to this day I still walk around with, not quite, the Walkman. I still always have headphones in my ears, but I mean, from the time I was young and had my first Walkman, I always had a bag of cassettes with me because I was always changing a new cassette in there. And the day I got one with an AM/FM radio on it, I was big shit, buddy, let me tell you. And then to finally go to the Discman, you know, the CD equivalent. But man, were you attached at the hip with these kind of things?
Oh, yeah.
I never didn't have it with me. I even had a backup in case one broke. Like, I always had to have it working.
The Walkman I had a speaker on it, and the headphones I had were mono, but it played stereo, or maybe it was backwards, so you couldn't put the jack in all the way. But I'd be riding my bike with the headphones on, and then I'd stop and realize that the music's coming still out of the speaker and in my headphones because the jack wasn't plugged in all the way, or else it would only come in one ear. Because it was stereo headphones, but mono.
I see.
And the Walkman. People would be staring at me, listening to Weird Al.
I had an older brother that had a job, so he could actually save money and buy his own things. And he bought, this is the 80s. I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead, but Walkman talk. And he had the Sony Walkman. He had the yellow one that you could lock. It had the gray lock on the side.
Yes.
Do you remember that one? And it was yellow, and it had the matching yellow headphones, and it was waterproof.
Yep.
And as a kid, I thought it was the coolest thing ever that I could see my brother sitting in the pool with his Walkman floating on top of the water, listening to tapes. And so whenever he would like leave the house, I would like sneak into his room and borrow his Walkman. I had one too, but mine was like the cheap red one that fell apart.
Yeah, but that you don't take in the pool.
The one you sneezed and it skipped for an hour after?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I would borrow the big yellow one and put my, you know, I used to tape his records. So like I tape his Van Halen records and stuff onto a blank gold Maxell tape, right? So I could have the best tunes in the Walkman that I'd steal from him when he wasn't home.
It's funny the kind of freedom the Walkman, I guess, gives you. It sounds stupid now, but at that age, you know, I was so obsessed with music. I was learning guitar, and I just always was thinking about music, wanting to listen to it, trying to play it. So the quickest you could get home and get in front of it was always the best feeling, but to have it with you all the time. Mm-hmm. Boy, did I MacGyver some ways to listen to that shit at school, too. Like, when the little earbuds first came out, I was like, holy crap, this is like an innovation, you know? I grew my hair long, and it just would kind of come up the back of my neck here, up over my ear and into the ear, and then I'd keep the hair over the ear, and boy, I was good at getting away with that. But
that was kind of the cool part of that, the tail end of the 70s, is you have, like, the self-expression. Like, you have the Ramones and the Clash, and you have your way to listen to those in your day-to-day and kind of, you know, have your own soundtrack to your life, kind of.
Fight the man on the road instead of just sitting at home, to like, fighting the man.
Right.
Yeah, I never thought about that, making the soundtrack of your life.
Yep.
Yeah.
In the 80s, you take your blank and again sort of jump ahead, but I won't be there next week, so whatever. Where I don't know if you did this, but I'd get my blank tapes from like A&A Records and Tapes, and you'd listen to the radio.
Yes!
And then when the song came on the radio you're waiting for, you'd tape it really quick, and it was done. You'd try to pause it and not get the talking and things in between.
Holy shit. I definitely did that.
So many times yelling at the DJ to stop talking while the beginning of the song is playing.
Oh my God, screaming till you're red in the face. Where are you going? But the radio kept me a slave to it for that very reason. You'd sit there like for like a 3-hour block. This has got to be the time. You haven't played it in for a long time. And, like, every night that I, like, sat down with the intentions of trying to catch a song, the second I turned on the radio, it would just be ending. I'm like, oh, crap! So I know it's going to be at least another 3 or 4 hours before you hear it again, you know? But
now you think you're slick calling up the radio station. Yeah, I'd like to request a song. Okay, yeah, we'll play it. So then you're stuck waiting and waiting for it to never play.
Not now, Mom! I'm busy!
Yeah. Man, I'd love to find some of those tapes, because some of those tapes do have those old commercials on them. And like I know one in particular, I don't know if I still have it or not, but from when I was real young, I'm talking like I was recording like Guns N' Roses off of the radio, and there was an old Copenhagen commercials like Copenhagen make you feel so good, you know, and I was just like, wow, different time indeed. Yeah. Oh, man, where are we at? So I think that's probably good for the 70s pop culture, but we covered some good stuff there. One quick thing I'll mention, because we've talked about so many times Disney World. Disney World Orlando opened up in 71.
Okay.
Ah.
Yeah.
Oh, good one. Good call.
Yeah, yeah. And I could just go down a foxhole of conversation when it comes to those theme parks, but I'm not gonna. Not this time. Because we have to move on. And yes. Before we do, really quick, we must once again, this being the last time, we can mention Laser Wolf, Adult Swim, its premiere. Yeah. Again, how would you describe this, Jack? It was four characters, Laser Wolf, Cannon
four
Wolf.
Four animals.
Stupid Horse. I cannot, for the life of me, remember the fourth character's name.
I can't remember either.
Take those characters and put them with hijinks, and you have a show.
In a cafe.
I wonder if the whole series will be in the cafe was just the first episode. But again, the color palettes they choose, very how would you describe it? Almost like a pastel neon.
Very pastel, yeah.
80s vibe to it, I guess.
Yeah, easily.
The animation is
super clean and smooth, too. Really clean and smooth.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I really liked about it.
Like I was kind of saying last week, if you're an Aqua Teen Hunger Force fan, you'll probably get into this. Because it's resonating with us kind of the same way I would say that show did. So, once again, April 7th at midnight on Adult Swim, Laser Wolf. That's Wolf with a U. Spell it that way. That's the way it's really spelled. All right. With that, let's swing open the door to the comic vault. I have nothing this week because I was a little busy. So,
son of a bitch.
Yeah, son of a bitch indeed. Jack, why don't you kick us off there?
Well, I've got a cheap find from a grab bag at a local discount store.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about that really quick one more time, how that grab bag thing works.
There's at Ollie's Bargain Basement, I think. Do you know? Are you familiar with that store at all? Well, it's good stuff cheap is their motto.
Okay.
And they have...
But it's always like, is it like secondhand stuff or is it all...
I think it's bottom of the barrel stuff that didn't sell at some places, cheap.
So like where off. Big Lots is sending their shit.
Exactly, yeah.
It doesn't sell.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. But yeah, in their book section, they've got bags of... There's 8 comics for $5.
And can't beat that.
No, and there's... Like the one guy when I was buying a set, he said usually there's probably 2 decent ones in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, I've out of the 3 that I've read so far, they're winners are each one of them.
So he admittedly puts like at least 2 shitty ones in there. Or?
I don't know who packs them, but they go from indie to.
Are they packed like DC? Something they did there, or are they like packed with like UPCs on them? Or
yeah, there's UPCs on
really,
them. But a lot of people they open them up and fish out what's good.
I
them,
see. Because
there I guess there have been some gems. Well, I've got that San Diego Comic-Con from 2003, Kiss number 1.
Oh, yes, I remember that, yeah. You bastard. Anyway, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Continue.
Well, this is called The Scourge. It's from Aspen Comics, which I've never heard of.
A little place called Aspen.
Where the women flow like wine, California. This is a number 0 comic. There's not a lot of story of what's going on. There's a fella that's a cop, and he's on the phone kind of arguing with his wife about him coming home or going to pick up his kid at a play. And he's like, yeah, I'll go. I'll be there. And next thing you know, this big gargoyle creature attacks him. And the whole time he's fighting this gargoyle while you can hear his wife or girlfriend in the background on the phone. Are you there? Are you even there yet? And... It's straight up action. The art is awesome on it, but there's not a lot of story. It's just kind of like a beginning. Apparently, it's some kind of a plague. So
this whole comic is this fight or whatever?
Pretty much, yeah. But I guess
it's like an episode of Dragon Ball Z, essentially.
Pretty much. They reference that there's some kind of plague. It almost kind of. I haven't seen the movie, but the Will Smith, I Am Legend. Is that the one?
Yeah, with the vampires. Yeah. Vampires?
Yeah. I kind of get that vibe. I've never seen the movie, so I really can't relate too much, other than it's nighttime and these creatures are fighting him. And he looks to be the only one around.
Looks like there's a big bat silhouette there, so I can see the...
Yeah, he thinks he defeated it, but then he's kind of talking his inner monologue, and he realizes, nope, here comes another one, so he's
getting... So these are like a vampire kind of...
They don't really go into it, it's just...
Is that one of them right there?
Yeah, I don't know.
Kind of like a Mars Attacks looking insect, kind of fucked up. Yeah, would
they just said it's some kind of a plague, I guess, that he refers to, but they don't go into it at all. It's just really this battle of him trying to get away and go get his kid from the play that he's at and trying to be the good dad.
So he's fighting off all these monsters just to pick his son up? Like this isn't like a regular occurrence?
Yeah.
Wow.
But okay. It's by the movie producer that did Aliens, The Abyss, Armageddon, Incredible Hulk, Terminator, Terminator 2.
Wow, really?
Gail Ann Hurd, yeah. So it's got to be pretty good. I haven't heard of it. I want to read more of it because this is the, you know, the number 0. So it's just the teaser of.
Let me just take a peek at it.
Really story.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, the artwork looks wicked on it. Man.
Yeah, it looks great. Looks great from over here. Wow, that's awesome.
You like
that? Thank you for bringing your comic to a podcast. That's wonderful.
So we'll throw up some images online and some links to the artist and drawers and
yeah, there you go.
And tracers.
There you go. Very good. Well, the Riz, it is now your turn to talk about a comic we can't see.
Good. Well, I didn't even, out of respect, I didn't even bring it with me, so there you go. Actually, to stick with the theme of the 70s, and this is a comic I've mentioned a couple of times, but it's one that I've always gone back to and really, it actually shaped my opinion on comics and how cool comics could be. It's from 1976, and there was a company called Power Records, or Power Comics, and they would release these full-length albums, so 33rd and a 3rd RPM records, that came with a full-size comic that you would put the record on, and side A would be the story with the narrator and the voices and the sound effects, and there'd be 2 stories. So side A would be 1 story, and side B would be another story. So you probably remember they used to make the 45 versions of it. There was like the Star Wars ones, the Black Hole ones, right? But this is like a full size album, a 33rd and a third. And the one that I had, one of them, they had a whole series, but the one I have is a Batman story. Side A is Batman, his plane crashes and he gets attacked by Gorilla Grodd. And then side B is he meets this detective in England at the end he thinks is the ghost of Sherlock Holmes. And it's these two like weird, crazy stories. The voice acting is amazing. And it was the first time, like if you think of comics in the 70s, you know, like the paper was coarser and kind of, you know, darker and things. And it was the first time you used a higher quality paper. So I saw this bright, vibrant, colored paper with this amazing graphics. It was Carrie Bache or someone, and Edwin McGinnis? ? Look it up. You can Google it. I don't have my sure. I'm on the phone. But the artwork, it just looked like if Neil Adams had done it. Like it was very vibrant and very dynamic. And there's a scene with Batman fighting some English thugs, which is still one of my favorite pages of any Batman comic ever. The coloring was amazing. It was just so vibrant because you just heard these amazing voice actors and sound effects. And to this day, I love the look of the classic comic where there's caption box, a bunch of dialogue and action. You know, like right. that, you know, if you think of like the weird, weird tales or all the old horror comic books and that kind of thing, I love that style. And this had a lot of narration. So they had a ton of caption boxes and it's really wordy, but at the same time, all the panels had room to breathe and it was action packed. There's one scene of Batman being trapped in this airtight container thing and Gorilla Grodd is like shocking him with like this pink light stuff. And oh, it was brilliant, but that's still one of my favorite comics to this day, actually. And they had a whole series. They had a $6 million Man one, a Superman one, and some other ones, but I just had the one. Yeah, it was great. So there you go.
It was a full-size record.
And I've seen... It's a full-size record, and the comic... Like, you know when you buy a record sometimes, and it'll have, like, a gateway art, and it'll fold out and things?
Yeah.
It was like that, but the comic is the same size. So it's an actual comic in the inside... of this record, but it's the same size as the cover. So it's like this big oversized comic that comes with a wow. record that brings your comic to life. Every once in a while, I see the Batman one at Comic Cons. And for some reason, that's the only one I ever see is the Batman one. But if you ever come across it, pick it up. It's a really good find.
What's it typically going for when you see something like that? I imagine that'd be a spicy little meatball.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Well, the one thing when it comes to records, it depends on the shape of the album too, right?
Sure.
Like I think I saw it once at a con for like, I want to say maybe 20, 30 bucks somewhere in there. It's not too bad.
Shit.
Not
bad.
Yeah. Swipe that up.
Yeah.
Well, even a new record, like if you buy a new one off the shelf, you're looking at $25 or more, right?
So, yeah. At least.
Yeah. And so, I mean, depending on the condition, if it's mint or whatever, it's probably worth more. But yeah, like if you find it for 20 or 30 bucks, pick it up and, if you don't have a record player, go get one. It's definitely worth having a turntable just to check out that comic and record, because that's what inspired my band to do a concept CD and comic book. But that'll be part of the conversation later. But that
yeah, you've already got me hooked. I'm hooked. I got to know more about that, but we'll get there.
We will. But yeah, that's my comic vault pick of the week for the 70s.
Nice.
I like that, and I think we should continue the trend as such where. Next week for the 80s, we'll talk 80s comics, 90s, okay. 90s comics. It makes sense. Well, I don't know why we haven't been doing that this whole time.
Yeah, really.
Oh, man. Good on you, Riz. Well,
you're welcome. That's what I'm here for. I'm here to change lives, really. That's what I do.
Comes on and changes the whole show.
You can check that off your daily list as done.
Done. Yes. Thank you. That was, I'm glad I was here for that. So, congratulations.
All right. Randy, what you got?
So, Riz, thanks for that mental image. Cause kind of what I've got is kind of tying into what you have. You know, you're sitting there talking about, you know, your experience with that comic and that record. And the image I have in my head is like the little kid version of you, like hunkered up in your bedroom with a blanket over with a, you know, the record going and you're like reading at night with the flashlight. And my son's 7, and I want to try and instill those type of memories with him, you know, because everything's tech now. And it's really hard for me with him at that age to find appropriate comic books. you know, I don't want to have that, the conversation with him just yet. So, you know, I got to be kind of careful. So I found these Sonic comics, which Sonic the Hedgehog Sega Genesis was a huge part of my life, you know, growing up. And just kind of having something like that to relate to him that I know isn't going to be, you know, Dad, why are they drawn this way? Well, son, ask your mother, you know, stuff like that. So, I guess it's more of a, my vault is more of a question to all three of you guys. Like, do you have any recommendations of maybe kid friendly comics, maybe on the newer side or independent?
Are you like wanting to like be in the realm of Marvel or anything like that? Or does it matter?
I mean,
does
as much it... as I want to feed the Disney machine, I mean, I also respect the independent stuff. So, okay. I mean,
I just don't know which way you're wanting to go with it. Like, so you just anything?
Anything. Yeah, just throw some out there. Riz, if you got anything too, I mean.
He's 7, you said?
Yes, sir.
Like off the top of my head, I'm thinking of things. There was James Robinson who did Starman. Remember that brilliant comic in the 90s?
I do remember Starman.
Oh, Starman. Go and read it. He did a YA book called Leave It to Chance. And it's about a young girl. She has a dragon and she does a bit of magic and things. Okay. And it was catered to a younger audience, but I was an adult and I loved it. And it was great storytelling. The art was wonderful. Good stories, but also smartly written. You know, like they weren't writing down for the younger audience. So that one was really, leave it to chance. If you find the collection of that, that would be really good.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I guess I would suggest, because to this day, I still get a kick out of Uncle Scrooge comics. I love Scrooge. I love the DuckTales. Mm. I love that whole scene. I know it's feeding the Disney machine,
right,
Randy. But, you know, they span through time. I think IDW does it now, but you can still, like, if you go to, like the comic book store down the road here, Packrats, you can go in the basement, root through vintage comics, and you can find old Uncle Scrooge stories that when I see them, I always pick them up, and they always still hold up. Was it Carl... Who was that? Jack Barks?
Barks.
That did those books and those stories. And that would be my recommendation. One comic, I don't keep up with new comics really much anymore. One, they're so freaking expensive. You know, Jack said he got 8 comics for $5. Mm-hmm. A new comic, $5 will get you 8 comics.
8 comics, yeah.
You know, and just a regular one. If it's thick at all, then you're not getting that book today. Yeah. But.
The Batman animated series comics, you can find those.
Yeah.
Okay.
Based on the Paul Dini stuff, because like the art's really, it's really, I mean, it's really clever, really well done. But all the stories were just like the comic, like the TV show, right? So, good superhero stories, but again, for a kind of a younger audience, so you don't have to worry about all the things you're worrying about as far as the artwork and that type of thing.
Right.
How much attention do you expect he'll give these comics? Like, is it going to be something he's going to look at once or twice, kind of throw away? Or is he think it's something he's going to like, it's an experience he's going to have? And
I mean, that's what I want for him. Sure. So, you know, whether or not he actually goes for it, that's a different story. But
knowing his personality, which way do you feel he would go?
I think if I hit the right tone, something he's interested in.
What's he like now? What's he into now?
He's all over the place. He's like doing the video game repair stuff with me. He's big into cars and tornadoes and weather and say just typical 7-year-old boy stuff.
Okay.
You know, monsters, stuff like that.
What about like what we were talking about earlier with Garfield?
Yeah.
Calvin and Hobbes, just those little small,
like the old strips. Yeah.
That's how I started. It's more of looking back that he was always out in the yard imagining and having fun, which I don't know if kids really go out and do that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, you should, man.
Yeah, I'm serious.
I mean, most stores you go to will have a safe section, like a kids section. Typically anything on Image is like always adult. Like even the Fairyland thing was like, oh, that looks like kids.
Yo, nope. No.
Oh, it says fuck Fairyland. Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, there's typically always like a wall or a section for kid-friendly stuff, but that would be—I would say The Simpsons, but they discontinued those Bongo comics in the.
Unless you get all the dollar bin ones, so that's good for the price.
You'd have to be really vested. I mean, that's a dig, though. I don't know. I don't know how into The Simpsons he is, but
I mean,
yeah, probably not much, but. Go ahead.
I guess the thing is, you can always take him to a comic shop and just see what he's attracted to, right? Like one of my very first early comics I remember is Marvel Superheroes 83, and it was the Hulk in 1978 or 79, and I couldn't read it. But just looking at it, I was like, this is the coolest thing on the face of the planet, right?
Right.
And if I went to read it now, maybe the story isn't that good, but I would try to make up in my head what I thought was happening in the story. So even if you find, you know, something that you think looks age-appropriate, that even if it's a little bit older, as long as it's not too overly sexualized, you should be pretty safe, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
And I just want that for my son to be able to have, like, the feeling of a comic and just turn those pages, like, you know... I got a Kindle reader for Christmas one year, and just not having a physical book and having that feel of the pages, it takes you so far out of it.
It does.
Yeah. Oh, Teen Titans Go. Sorry, Teen Titans Go.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there okay. you go. Yeah. Right. Perfect. Yeah, that's a great suggestion. Can you think about that?
The art is really good. It's really funny. It's well written, right? It's goofy, but it's also really clever, too, so that would be a really good one.
All right, perfect. I appreciate that. Thank you.
And if any of our listeners have any suggestions for Randy, hit us up. Let us know on our website, social media, and we'd be glad to relay them and help him get his son the comics he needs and deserves.
Or anybody else that's listening that's kind of in my boat that have kids that, you know, you want to kind of break into this.
Yeah. Just make sure he doesn't run straight for, like, the Vampirella or anything like that.
I'll keep him away for Elvira. That's for Daddy.
Red Sonja.
Red Sonja. Daddy, can I get this one? All right. Anything else before we move on?
No.
Very good. Very good, successful comic vault. I feel like there's something we should be saying here before we move on. Am I forgetting something?
Society6.com, buy a t-shirt. There we go.
Well said, Jack. Well said indeed. And with that, let's turn our attention over to the Riz and talk about Draw Me In Comics. Thanks so much for being here again, man. I'm so honored that you're stepping away from the party you're at to humor us with conversation. Serious. Thank you.
Oh, well, if there's one thing I like to do is talk about comics and myself. So, you know, if I can take time to do that, it's always a good day.
And I'm excited to talk about what's happening here. First of all, let's talk about drawmeincomics.com. This platform, again, seems to be a godsend for anyone who's new to comics, any indie creator who's looking to get their comic out there. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about the platform?
So Draw Me In Comics is a website designed specifically for independent comic book creators. So they can post the things on our site. They can sell digital versions of their comics. We can also post scripts. So if you're a writer that is looking for an artist, you can put up a copy of your script saying, this is a script idea I have. Here's the amount of pages. Here's the style. Who's interested? So if you sign up as a creator on our website, and if you read someone's script idea and you like it, you can actually contact them directly through our site and say, I would like to work with you.
That's awesome.
And then you can network through our site in the hopes that you'll create more digital comics that you can also put on our site. You know, so we really want to find a creator-friendly place that you can sell your books and feel like you're not being taken advantage of, you know. Scott, RP, and I, the ones that started the company, we come from the independent music world. That's how we started. And through our love of comics, and that Batman comic is actually, we did a 20-track concept record that came with a graphic novel. And every song on the record comes with its own 2-to-5-page graphic novel that goes along with the comic. And when we did that project, we found it very difficult to find artists. We didn't know where to start. And that's kind of where the idea for this website came from. It's like, we need to find a place to bring these independent people together, right? And really help promote them. If there's one group who needs the most support, it's the independent artists and the independent writers.
Don't we know? You know,
yeah. Another really cool feature of our site that we do is if you sign up as a creator or a collector, if you want to buy comics, we have what we call super coin packages. So you buy an X amount of coins per package, and then you use those coins to buy the comics. But the nice thing is, because we take a percentage off the purchase of the coins, if you're an artist, whatever you ask for the purchase price of your comic, you get to retain your asking price. So instead of going to a bigger website that's owned by Amazon, let's say, you know, where... If you sell a comic through them, they take anywhere from 18 to 30%, right? That's their commission.
Sure.
But we do the opposite. Through our market research, we discovered that a lot of people who support independent artists specifically were like, well, you're like an angel investor, right? You pay a little bit more on the front end, so the artists get to keep the money they ask for on the back end. So so that's another big difference that we have with our site too. So we really want to make it artist friendly and creator friendly and just really help promote the people that are starting off and want to make a name for themselves.
That's great, number one, 100% return to the artist on, with their work. I mean, mm-hmm. where else are you going to get that? But two, the network set up between creators. You know, how many times have we had somebody on the show that, where they're like, you know, I was sat next to my creator at a con. We got to talking and stuff happened, you know. And with a platform like this, just constantly thriving and, I don't know, learning and growing off of each other to make products that's going to then in turn go right back on the site. It's just it's a good cycle you have going. Yeah.
Well, exactly. And I mean, as like, I'm a writer, I'm not an artist. I need people that can draw and do the cool stuff that I see in my head because I can't do it. But if I go to Comic-Con as a writer, I can't go to a table and say, hey, do you want to read my script? Because guess what? No one actually wants to read your script. Yeah. Right? Like, now, if you're an artist, hey, do you want to see my portfolio? Oh, sure. You know, so it's just nice that there's a place that we can post scripts. And like we have other ideas. Like I'm even thinking of maybe once a month posting a quick 4-page story that I write and just tell artists, look, here's a free script. If you want to draw for it, cool. Use it for your portfolio. Just give me credit for it. Maybe do a compilation of it if you want to submit it and have like a free compilation. You can check out people's artwork based on stories that other people write, that kind of thing. Like we have lots of ideas that we want to spawn off from this, right? So, but yeah, that's just it. You know, like people need to start somewhere, and we have this powerful thing called the internet. So why not use it to promote the people that need the most promotion?
Absolutely.
We always hear that how the writers are searching all over for the artists going through what's that website?
Like DeviantArt or
yeah, DeviantArt.
Oh, okay.
But this way, it kind of turns around where the artist can actually try to find work, and they'll find a script and be like, "Hey, I might want to draw that kind of thing."
Yeah,
and
I mean, everybody. Yeah, that's
cool. Well, exactly. And the thing with like I've been to Comic-Con. Well, I've been to a Comic-Con or two, and I'll go to the sessions, and a question that comes up every time you go to a writing session or an artist section, someone will go up and say, I'm an artist. How do I promote my work? And they, well, go to DeviantArt, go to this. And this is before my website was up. And I was in my head. I'm like, just wait, give me like 6 months and I'll have something different for you. You know, and it's not that I'm anti DeviantArt, but I could draw my own fan fiction art. That's terrible because I'm not a good artist. I'm not. And I could put it up and my friends would say, oh, that's awesome. And like, there's everything on DeviantArt. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whereas right now with our site, if you have a comic that's done that you can put up digitally, we're ready for you, right? So it's just not for fan fiction. Oh, I'm going to draw a little picture on a napkin and post it. Like, no, we want finished work. We want to show right. people what you can actually do, and the fact that you have the work ethic and you put the blood equity into it. So now let's get out there into the world.
I mean, I guess to compare, I don't want to compare it to this, but I mean, the closest thing I can think of that most people might know would be like Comixology, but user friendly. This one is, you know, Comixology just seems to always be headaches with me. I don't go there too often.
I don't anymore, really.
Yeah.
Well, eventually, if we could become like the Comixology for independent comics, like that'd be great, you know. But creating a community at the same time, and that's really what we're trying to. That's a different part of it. It's just not put your stuff on there, and you know, again, we don't want to make money from the artists. We want to make it from the people that are buying the comics, you know?
That's right. It makes sense. Making the community, because then everyone works together and there's mm-hmm. friends and they all collaborate and kinda real like, good stuff comes out that way.
Kind of like the LinkedIn for, you know, that genre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. For comic creators. Yeah.
Yeah, if you took Comixology and LinkedIn and made it way cooler, that's our website. So in Canada, the Calgary Comic Con is coming up here in a couple of weeks, and it's sort of like the big one in Western Canada, the second biggest one to the Toronto Comic Con. And I'm in talks with a couple independent comic book publishers that are looking at using us to become their digital distribution network. So I'm hoping in the next couple of months I can announce that we suddenly have another 25-30 titles other companies. Yeah. And we're also talking with like comic book clubs and things. There's a group I'm part of here in Saskatoon that we meet once a month and we discuss comics and we create different projects and creating like our own comic book club. And every once a month, we'll just make a little anthology of the work we've been putting up, and maybe we'll sell it for a little bit to raise money for the club, or maybe we'll even just sell it for free. But, you know, making like an issue, and again, just to promote comics and how cool it is in general, you know, like it's amazing. Like, we live in this era of all these comic book movies, which is fantastic. Like, I never would have thought I would go see a Shazam movie and think it was amazing. And it totally is. When it comes out, by the way, go see it. You know, but we can't forget that if it wasn't for comics, we wouldn't have these cool movies.
Right.
You know, if it wasn't for this artwork on, you know, color paper that you can flip through and touch, we wouldn't have all this cool stuff. So go buy the comics, you know, support the people making them.
Absolutely. And for anyone who might be on the fence about checking out drawmeincomics.com, you guys even have some titles for free on there that people can come check out, right?
We do. And keep in mind that if, like, some artists, what they'll do, they'll put the first issue for free and then they'll sell the other one. So that's sure. That's not us telling. We're not. They set their own prices. We're not telling them put free stuff on, blah, blah. You know, it's free for artists to join. It's free for collectors to join. All they lose is their time to put. And even if your stuff is on Comixology, you can still put it on our site if it's independent. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
All you have to do is make an account and upload it, and they can set their price, right? So you have, I know our comic is up there free just to get people looking. So go take a look. You can sign up for free. You can get free comics. Like, what else do you want? Free, yeah, no people. Kidding. Come on.
They're giving you comics, people. What do we have to do? And, like, pick you up and take you to the comics? I mean, we couldn't make it any easier, right?
Yeah, do I have to shake you out of bed and like carry you to your desk? No, we have all types of genres. Everything from like over the top horror stuff to some hilarious, like, you know, black and white comics to full on color digital stuff. There's a bit of everything for everyone. So go check it out.
That I can vouch for that personally. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, there were quite a few genres. There's tons of stuff to look through. So, yeah.
Oh, good. And keep in mind, we're like 6 months in, like we're less than a year old. Without exaggeration, we have new users signing up every single day. And so now we're really focusing on getting more people to put their comics up, right? So we're getting a lot of customers and we're getting more and more creators. But, you know, we need to fill those shelves full of stuff for people to buy. So if you're out there looking at your digital comic saying, I don't know what to do with it, draw me in comics. We're waiting for you with open arms.
We'll help you spread the word, because, I mean, we see our fair share of comic creators come through this show. So we'll definitely be helping you spread the word on that. Now, before we go any farther, I've got to know more about your comic that has music accompaniment to it.
Oh, for sure. So I play with a band called Ultimate Power Duo. And we're a big fan of concept records, right? Like The Who, Tommy, and Quadrophenia. Which I actually like Quadrophenia a lot better. I know that's a swear word among Who fans, but whatever. And so we wrote a concept record that follows the adventures of a boy named Joe. He lives in a future where the world has gotten together, kind of like the UN, and created this sort of global galactic pact to research space and things. And he feels like this draw to the stars. So one day he steals a spaceship and flies to the moon and finds a secret moon base. And then discovers there's a whole secret society government organization there, and he becomes part of the group and flies around and gets into adventures. So when we wrote the record, we had the idea for the story and wrote the lyrics in order so the story makes sense. And then we want to do a graphic novel version to go along with it. And originally, we want to do a short story like the Batman record. So you'd buy the record, have this big, huge, maybe like 12-page comic type thing. And then we went to price it out and discovered to have one of those printed in modern times would be about $120 per record.
Holy shit.
Which, I mean, I guess given they don't do it like that much anymore, so that was, we couldn't afford to do that. So then we tossed back and forth what to do. And then we decided to make it more of a jam comic where we would get different artists to do different songs. So there's 20 songs. Each song has its own 2 to 5 page story that goes along with it. But we had 12 different artists doing the 20 different songs. And they were given the lyrics and the synopsis of what the song was about and what the whole idea of the story was and character descriptions. But there, they were allowed to run with it how they wanted. So some people just did their own artwork and their own script and bang, bang, done. Some people just gave us artwork and said, here you go. And then we had to figure out who to do the lettering afterward. Some people just said, give me a page by page script. So I did some script work myself and did, you know, panel one, page one, that type of thing. And so then when we were done, we had this really cool full color jam comic that follows the adventures of this space boy named Joe, right? Who sometimes looks like a Top Gun character. In one version, he has Liberty spikes. In another one, he looks like Adam Strange. So it's a really cool project.
It sounds awesome, and I would love to see slash hear this. So is there any way we could go out on this episode on any of this music? Is that a possibility? I'm sure
there is. If you go to Bandcamp.com and just look up Ultimate Power Duo, you'll actually see the Ultimate Power Duo presents the Adventures of Space Joe Ad Astra. We like our long, pretentious titles, so it's on that. And you can listen to it for free, and you can name your price. So I think if you name your price as zero, we can actually download it for free. And we actually have a synopsis of all the lyrics and everything on there and a sample of the artwork. But on Draw Me In Comics, if memory serves, I think we have our full comic for download for free. So if you sign up and you look up Space Joe, you'll find our comic. So you can download the comic for free, go to Bandcamp, listen to it for free, and the world's a happy place.
Wow. I'm going to check that out. And yeah, with your blessing, I'd like to maybe put one of the songs at the end of this episode.
Yeah, go for it. And what's really neat, like since we did it, the very first artwork we got back came back from Raleigh Rosmo, who's now gone on to work with Image. He did Batman, and he's done some really big names and things, right? Okay. So we've had quite a few artists who are now getting like major league work that worked on our comic. And Raleigh was the first one to, in our mind, we're like, oh, we'll find the artist, give him the stories, we'll have the work back in like a month, right? And a month later, Raleigh sent his artwork, but there's no lettering on it. And so I emailed Raleigh back. I said, oh man, the artwork looks great, it's awesome. When are we getting the version with lettering on it? And his response was, I don't do lettering. I was like, oh, I should have, right? I should have thought of that. And I'm sure he didn't, in my head, that's just how I read it. So anyway, so then, but it was a learning curve. We had never done anything like that before. Sure. So, and by the time it was all said and done, it took about 4 years for us to finally get the comic finished. So, but we did, and it's great. And we're actually doing a sequel to it right now. So we're doing a record called Duophenia, Space Joe 2. And each story is going to be about one of the side characters that you meet from the first record, but don't learn much about, you know. So we're basically, we're George Lucasing it, basically. We're creating our own universe. even the janitor gets a story in this one. He doesn't, but I wish he would have. But this next one, I'm actually writing all the stories myself with one artist, so it's a bit more cohesive, right? Mm-hmm. The last one is definitely a jam story. So you know, sometimes when you look at, like I said, some people are like, who's this guy? It's the same guy. I have to figure it out. Our readers are smart. They'll figure it out. But this one will be a bit more cohesive, you know, shorter song, shorter tracks, one artist, that kind of thing. So we're doing a follow-up to it. We're going to keep doing the music comic mashup just because that's our loves. And so we just want to keep doing it. So, and we loved it so much, we made a website. So there you go.
Well, I really dig what you guys are doing, and I cannot wait to see your comic and hear this music. I just love when there's music accompanying a comic.
Absolutely.
It's so freaking awesome. It just pulls you in even more. So very excited, and I just want to thank you, Riz, for being here with us today. This has been a hell of a lot of fun, and again, for stepping away from your party to talk with us here at Canned Air. Man, what an honor. What an honor.
Well, thanks for having me. I love having a chance to talk with fellow comic lovers and people that love this as much as I do. So if you ever need me to step away from a party again and chat with you, please keep me in mind.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, we'll probably take you up on that. We'll maybe try to do it when you're not at a party. But we'll probably definitely take you up on that.
Sure. Sounds good.
Jack, what do we have on the website?
Go to CannedAirPodcast.com, where you can check out our special guests, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, visit the Hall of Heroes, see you all of Justice,
Check out some of the videos from our YouTube page. Buy some merch, become a patron. And if you have any comments, complaints, or give us some kudos, send us an email on our contacts page.
Don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And Jack, I think, already mentioned the Patreon pod, but we have another show out there, folks. If you like what we're doing here, we have another show that's a little bit more formal. How would that?
Cerebral?
Cerebral. Yeah, a little bit more cleaned up than the old Canned Air here, but it's called What If, inspired by the old Marvel Comics What Ifs, where we look at our own reality with a single twist on every episode. What if we could fly? What if we could control the weather? And we talked for about 45 minutes on what happens in those scenarios. So, head over to whatifpod.com, or you can search on your podcast players at What If Series, or the one with the yellow text and the blue background. Can't miss us.
Nope.
Can't miss us. And I think that's going to do it for this week. So until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
And I am the Riz.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Start the voyage, fly the belly ending speed. Feel the pulsing universal energy. Drivers engage, supercharged technology. Now discover everything a real life can mean. Finally found home. No time to explore. Targeted. Prepare for full frontal. Destination. Eyes unsuspecting. Complete the first mission. Discover what a real life means and why the chosen are all sent.
Chicken?
Hold on there, boys.
Wow, it's Flint!
Instead of writing your name, write CannedAirPodcast.com and help spread the word.
Well, that's a great idea. Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
I'm going to introduce you first. You're good. You're good. You're good. You're good. No worries.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.